Yeah, man. Nick DiTullio here. We are live in the Allstate studios here till midnight. And a very ridiculous coincidence happened during the news, during the break. We were talking a little bit earlier. Colin and Eric are here. They're live in studio, special announcement with a really cool event that's going to be happening at the Music Box. And we're going to finish up reviewing the movies as well. But we were talking about the movie Joe earlier, which has a phenomenal performance by Nicolas Cage. And highly recommended. It's on demand. Anyway, we were talking about the crappy movies that Nicolas Cage has made. And I had meant he was in a John Woo movie. And I had mentioned the movie Paycheck, which I was like, Paycheck. And then I'm like, oh, no, that's Affleck. And I don't remember the last time the movie Paycheck came up in any kind of conversation that I've ever had.
Or in the world.
When it came out. Mm-hmm. That would have been the only time. So the TV monitors are on here in the studio, and Channel 9, the weekend late night movie, starts. We look up at the screen. Paycheck.
In all its glory.
Like, how did that end? And Eric, you said I willed it to happen.
Yes, you willed it back to life.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you might,
Paycheck.
It's not to be confused with Payback, the great Mel Gibson movie.
Which is a terrific movie.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a quick question? You mentioned Joe.
Yeah.
That's not a remake of the Peter Boyle.
No.
Okay.
Not even. Close.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. Let's just say
Wait,
yes. Sure.
Stop that. No. Okay. Don't do that to me.
All right.
Clean and wholesome.
Colin, what the hell, man? Heaven is for real.
Yes, it is.
Spoiler alert. All right.
All right.
Man. Come on.
All right. That's it. I can leave now.
Yeah.
I said what I had to say. Now, all right. So this is based on a best-selling book of the same name. And it stars Greg Kinnear as a small-town preacher who, he also does little stints in the fire department and he coaches Little League. You know, he's kind of, all-around small-town guy. Everybody knows him. And he has a wife and two kids, and one of whom, his boy, has a near-death experience. While he's having an appendectomy in the hospital, he has visions. And when he comes out of it, he talks very frankly, very openly, very matter-of-factly about his, what he saw. And, he claims he went to heaven, he met Jesus Christ and a few other people who are, named later in the movie. They're revealed later in the movie. And, what makes Kinnear's character believe his son is not just his own belief in heaven, but the fact that the kid also saw his grandfather, who he's never met and he's never seen pictures of, but he describes him perfectly. And eventually word gets around town about this kid's vision and he becomes a bit of a celebrity. But the movie doesn't really make the vision the point. The movie actually earns a little bit of credibility in that Kinnear's character doesn't automatically believe the kid, or he doesn't really... He doesn't fully embrace his son's story, even though he's a preacher and he should buy into it sight unseen. But Kinnear's character has doubts about it. The people in the church have doubts about it, and they're not sure that they want to be bragging about this, this kid having this vision. They're not sure they really want the kind of publicity, even though it falls into their beliefs. And that makes the movie, slightly above the usual faith-based films that we've seen lately. But the movie really does fall into the same trappings at the same time. In spite of that, it is very heavy-handed, is very ham-fisted. The vision of heaven is like a Hallmark card. The vision of Jesus Christ, he looks like the lead singer of a yacht rock band. I mean, it really does. I mean, the movie was written and directed, or I should say adapted and directed by Randall Wallace.
Braveheart?
Yeah. And Pearl Harbor, yeah. And this guy really needs to take a few lessons in subtlety. It's for the few things that the movie does have going for it, it's got a lot more going against it just in terms of how the message and how everything is presented. It's very simplistic, and it kind of takes something that should be full of it takes something, a story like this that could have been, you know, very thought-provoking and kind of, and really dumbs it down. I remember at the Field of Dreams screening a couple weeks ago, I was saying, you know, that movie was, you know, put together with the right talent, and they pulled off a storyline, a very spiritual storyline that could have just completely collapsed under its own weight and its own sort of on the surface ridiculousness. Well, this is the movie that Field of Dreams could have been if it didn't have that kind of talent behind it that, you know, that it had. So yeah, this is definitely not recommended. But probably, you know, one of the better faith-based movies, but it's still not very good.
Okay. Yeah, I don't even know what to make of it. Yeah. But it did some monster business over the week.
It did well.
Doesn't surprise me.
It opened well on Wednesday, and it's Easter weekend, so the title's going to grab people.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's the Heaven is for Real. And all right, Eric, why don't you tell us about The Railway Man?
Okay. Well, The Railway Man is based on a true story, and it stars Colin Firth. He's a former British officer who was captured during World War II and forced to build a railway, or a railroad for the Japanese. And during that period, he was severely tortured and beaten, as many people were at that time, the POWs. And the movie starts with him actually on a train meeting Nicole Kidman's character, and they have a sort of a courtship at the beginning of the movie as they meet and they fall in love, and it's only then that we start to see through flashback what happened to him back in the day as he sort of goes through his sort of bouts with post-traumatic stress and meets with some other people who were also there back in the day. And this is I like this movie. The stuff between Firth and Kidman, their chemistry at the beginning of the movie, could have almost just made a movie just based on that. I think their chemistry is really strong, and the writing is really strong between the two of them. Then we get to a lot of the stuff a little bit more familiar with the torture stuff and the war stuff. But Firth is really good. And what this movie eventually becomes is that he discovers that his torturer is still alive, and he finds out who he is and where he is, and he's going to confront him now in his adult life. So this movie is building up to this confrontation between these two men, and I think that stuff towards the end of the movie is very nicely handled as well. So,
by the way, if you have the opportunity to see the trailer for this movie, don't.
It kind of gives away
everything. Everything is in
this. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Everything is in the trailer.
Yeah.
Honestly, I even think the final shot of the movie is in the trailer.
That's okay.
My hunch, or at least one of the final shots of the movie.
Yep, it could be. I know what you're referring to. So, yeah. I like this movie. I think it's a good. It's good. And Firth is really good, and Kidman is really good in her scenes. And I forget the name of the actor who plays the torturer. He's been in a number of movies. A really good actor. So I like The Railway Man.
Yeah, so did Roy. Mm-hmm. Roy gave it a really good review earlier.
Yeah.
So that's The Railway Man, which is out right now. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll go to Transcendence, and then I want to make sure that we get enough time to talk about that, and definitely talk about what you guys want to talk about after 11:30.
Okay.
The Jim Jarmusch movie though is out, and it's unique. It's weird. I really liked it a lot. You're not a Jarmusch fan,
no.
But it's called Only Lovers Left Alive. It's a vampire movie kind of. So
It is.
Yeah. I figured I wanted to save more time for Transcendence, and then we want to get to the announcement that you guys have. All right, we'll take a quick break here. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios overlooking Michigan Avenue here until midnight, and after this next review, we're going to probably hit the news at 11:30, and then Colin and Eric are live in studio for a special reason, and we're going to tell you all about that coming up. Welcome back, guys.
Hello. Thank you.
All right, Colin, what the hell, man? Tell us about Transcendence.
Transcendence.
Transcendence, Colin.
All right, here we go. So Johnny Depp plays this tech guru, not unlike Steve Jobs, and he's kind of on the cutting edge of artificial intelligence. And he and his wife, played by Rebecca Hall, have been developing a machine that is kind of a mechanical soul, not unlike Scarlett Johansson and her. You know, they believe they can upload a person's brain into a machine and, you know, perhaps even carry out their life after they die. Well, Depp falls prey to, you know, kind of a life-threatening...
Let's say ill, cyber terrorists.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Let's not mince words.
All right. Well, anyway, he eventually dies, but not before uploading the contents of his brain into a machine that will, you know, enable him to use his brain as it was, while also merging with everything that's out there in the internet. And so, yeah, so there's a cyber terrorist network headed by Kate Mara, who people know probably best from House of Cards. And they want to do away with all forms of artificial intelligence out there. And they've been on his tail for quite some time. And they, you know, hear about what he's been doing and they try to hunt him down. So as a way of hiding from these terrorists, Depp instructs his wife to hide out in this small desert town, very unassumingly, and put together this sort of this science lab where, you know, Depp can cure blindness and ailments of all kinds, you know, with his new brain and his new means to access technology that is, you know, light years ahead of its time. Paul Bettany and Morgan Freeman are also in this as, you know, Depp's colleagues, and Cillian Murphy plays an FBI agent. This is a movie that's, you know, I was kind of with it for a little bit. I think it's right around the time when they got to the town and they start constructing the science lab is where I just couldn't go with it anymore. It definitely veers off into the realm of the ridiculous with each plot point after that. And I, you know, the movie tries to, you know, be very thought-provoking about artificial intelligence and the way we, you know, would use it. And it sort of, you know, wants to be a cautionary tale against it. But I don't think it succeeds in what it tries to do. I think it's almost more concerned with being, you know, a cyber thriller than at being, you know, a springboard for philosophical discussion. This just could not buy into this movie at all. It's pretty ridiculous.
And I want to note that this is the directorial debut of Christopher Nolan's cinematographer Wally Pfister, so which explains why Morgan Freeman and Cillian Murphy are in the movie,
right? And Rebecca Hall.
And Rebecca Hall. Mm-hmm. All right, Eric.
Yeah, this is a movie that just has no concept of its own identity. It's a movie that has one idea in its head, that the expansion of technology is a bad thing, which is a lesson that I learned when I was 8 years old when I saw Tron. You know, the mass control program says things, and I'm like, oh, okay, you don't want to, you know, let that, you know, and then Skynet and Terminator, and then, of course, Lawnmower Man. but, you know, this is a movie that's been done, you know, a trillion times before, and this movie keeps building up to this whole idea that, you know, Johnny Depp as this computer is going to be a threat to the world, and they keep telling you the threat, but they never really get to the point of it. They never really sell us on the idea that what Johnny Depp is doing, seemingly healing all these people. Okay, granted, he makes a few of them, you know, kind of like computer slaves. It's, you know, basically almost something out of Superman 3, actually. But this movie, to me, watching, you know, where it's going with this idea of the, you know, it keeps telling us the threat. Morgan Freeman's writing notes, run from this place. You know, it's like the episode of Seinfeld where Jerry is dating Christine Taylor and everyone around him is telling him, like, oh, there's something wrong with her, yeah, man. You should. And he doesn't know what's going on. That's what this movie is like. It's like the entire movie, they keep telling you that something's bad happening, but we never really see it. And I thought that the movie was actually, when it does start to get ridiculous, I did have the hope that it was actually going to turn the tables a little bit and not do the Lawnmower Man thing, which it never really gets to. That, like, the cyber terrorists were sort of more the bad guy than the Johnny Depp stuff, because the idea that people would actually be afraid of technology and afraid of the unknown and that kind of stuff, and the idea that he's dealing with stem cells and stuff like that, and that they would actually be afraid, and that like maybe you're the idiots in this thing, that you're afraid of science and that kind of stuff. But it never really gets there, and it just becomes this gigantic stiff of a movie where the humans have no personality, and you know, Johnny Depp as the computer is like the boring cousin to HAL 9000. It's a film that never develops any head of steam, and becomes boring and rote and not interesting in the slightest.
Yeah, we got a break. I'll give you my my review of it after the news, but we're pretty much on the same page.
Okay.
We'll take a quick break here on WGN, and the news is coming up next.
Yeah, man.
Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here till midnight. The lovely Amy Booth will be Goof will be coming in soon. Eric Childress and Colin Suter are here, and they're live in studio. And Transcendence, Eric and Colin were both mightily underwhelmed by the movie. And I'm with you guys on this one 100%. And as I was saying to you guys off the air, I was really looking forward to this movie because I think that Wally Pfister is a pretty extraordinary cinematographer. Mm-hmm. And I really, Inception has become sort of one of my favorite movies, and I watch it a lot, and I love the way it's shot, and I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe he learned something from Nolan on how to tell a great sci-fi story, you know, and no. it's really heavy. The ideas just seem to be, they're not explored, they're just kind of pushed, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a very crowded movie.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the cast is completely wasted, it gets monumentally silly. The last half of this movie is pretty ridiculous. None of it really works. The thing is, I know it's kind of unfair to compare it to Inception, but like the ideas in Inception were explored brilliantly. You know what I mean? They were not just stated and pushed. They were complexly, presented, explored, answered. That's a movie. Inception is a movie about ideas and really brilliant ones and really interesting ones and told beautifully. This is loaded with ideas that aren't explored at all and that are obvious, and there's too much of them. And he just seems to crowd the whole movie just seems very crowded to me, and it just gets really silly and you're right, I everybody's talking about how the danger of this and except for looking creepy on the screen, there's nothing really going on there.
Right.
So I was really disappointed because I really had high hopes for this one, because I think he's a great cinematographer, and a lot of cinematographers go on to be great filmmakers, and great directors.
Be nice if Johnny Depp was in a great movie again.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
What was the last?
Lone Ranger.
Yeah, no, that wasn't good.
It was, but
I'm trying to remember what you're the only guy.
Last great movie. Yeah. I would say Rango, but he's a character.
I don't like Rango. I like all of his, you guys can't stand all of his Burton movies.
I like some of them. I don't like Dark Shadows.
I don't like Sweeney Todd. Yeah.
I love Sweeney Todd.
I like Sweeney Todd. I hate Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, Alice in Wonderland. Like that. I love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which I actually think is better than Willy Wonka.
Yeah, we're like the only ones. There's a backlash on that thing that
didn't
exist
that
at
movie.
The time.
I love that movie. You know. It's more faithful to the book than listen. I don't want people my age calling me up and throwing stuff at me. I understand. Mm-hmm. Look, I grew up watching Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, okay? That movie came out, I was six or seven when that movie came out. So, yeah, of course, I love it. Yeah. Okay, I can't stand the music, but I love it. And it will always have a special place in my heart. I just think the Burton version is better.
There you go.
I really do. I think it's better. And it doesn't have Candyman in it.
That's true.
So Transcendence.
It's got some bad songs in it, though.
Well, they're just the only songs that are in there are the Oompa Loompa songs.
Yeah, the two of them are just at least two of those songs are really awful.
But they're from the book too, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
Yeah,
yeah. They do like a hip hop version or something like that.
Yeah.
It just like made me like, oh, stop, make it stop. I like the movie. I just don't like some of the songs.
And I
can't believe you guys didn't like Sweeney Todd.
I like Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd was on my top 10. Remember, you guys got mad at me because I put it on my top 10 list that year.
I didn't get mad at you.
Well, you
I
did.
Like I didn't
because
like,
I put it on my top 10 list. Wait a minute. I put it on my top 10 list and left something else off.
Knocked Up.
What was it, 2007? Yeah, Knocked Up was your number 11 that year.
Yeah.
And you put Sweeney Todd. Yeah, that was a mistake.
Sweeney Todd's better than Knocked
it's
Up.
Not.
It is, it's actually aged better than Knocked Up has. I don't think Knocked Up is as funny as it used to be. Of the Apatow movies, the only one for me that still holds up without question is 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Well, that's the best one.
Yeah. So, all right. Big news, right?
Yes.
Big news.
Yes.
Why don't you tell everybody what you guys are here for and tell us all about it.
Okay. Well, last year we had the great pleasure of putting on this the Chicago Critics Film Festival. We had it at your home, the Movie Co.
Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. Yes.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to do that over a weekend. And this year we have expanded it. We are going to be having an entire week at the Music Box downtown from May 9th to the 15th. We're going to be showing the total of 25 films, 2 shorts programs. We have incredible lineup slated for this year's event, and we're going to have a lot of special guests that we're all going to be mentioning here.
Yeah. All right. So it's the second annual one.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it's you know, you really expanded it this year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a full week. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. An entire week.
And I think every night we have a special guest.
Almost. I think there's night. Like one night we don't have a special guest, but we have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday, Saturday.
I think Monday night is the only one.
Monday night
have a
is the only night.
Guest.
What are the dates again?
May 9th to the 15th.
May 9th through the
Friday
15th.
Friday to Thursday, yeah.
Okay. And is there a website? Can people check out the website?
Yeah, ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. And also all the information is also up at the Music Box Theater website where you can buy tickets and passes. I'll tell you about that up front because you have a number of options here. For one, you can buy an entire festival pass that's good for all the movies throughout the week. For only $150. That's 25 films. And that includes, they're going to let us make Battleship Potemkin part of their Silent Saturday series. If you buy the festival pass, you have access to see that as well on Saturday afternoon.
Wow.
So that's the best bargain. But you can, for $100, you can buy a weekend pass from Friday to Sunday. And for $75, you can buy a pass for Monday to Thursday. And then individual tickets are also available for $12 for films without guests, $15 for films that have special guests. And seriously, you're not going to get a better deal at a film festival than that.
And how many premieres are you guys having?
Every film at the festival is a Chicago premiere.
Every
single film. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't have any world premieres. These are all films that are chosen by us. Chosen just films that any one of us have liked and want to embrace and want to show to an audience. And we sought them out and have brought them to Chicago for the first time. So a lot of these films, you know, may not even play Chicago again. There's some films that are still left without distribution. Hopefully we can help put a stamp on that as well.
Mm-hmm. And moving it to the Music Box, how did that happen?
It worked out that way that we wanted to expand things. We put things together at the Movie Co. very quickly last year. I think it was maybe even a little too much for them to handle sometimes, just because we put it together so fast. It came together so fast that we needed a little bit more room to breathe this year. And the people at the Music Box were interested in having it, and they were able to accommodate us with the necessary space. Movie Co., we're really in their debt from last year. We put this thing together as a spark of an idea and that me and Mike Kurz had talked about, and we put it together even to an extent that I don't think even Mike was aware of what we had in mind at the time. And this year we wanted something that we could get a lot of these bigger premieres and bring it to the city, which is where the core of the sort of the movie going audiences in this town.
And how many people are involved in programming it?
There's a sort of a core team of five of us, myself, Colin, Brian Talarico, Peter Zasinski, and Steve Procopi are sort of the main team and sort of putting things together. And what we did early on is we invite members of the CFCA to, if anyone has gone to festivals or have seen small films that people, you know, haven't seen yet, to let us know about them. You know, put these films on our radar so we can seek them out and see if we can see them or maybe, if, you know, support them as well. So we got films that have been recommended by other members that we were able to get. But the core of it was the five of us putting this thing together.
Okay. All right. We're going to go take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear about the movies that are going to be playing and the special guests for this fest taking place at the Music Box. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Yeah, Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Here till midnight, the lovely Amy Guth will be in with Red Eye Remix coming up in a few minutes. We're wrapping things up here with Eric and Colin, and we're talking about the Chicago Film Critic Film Festival. No website again?
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com, May 9th through the 15th.
Correct.
At the Music Box Theater. Tell me about some of the movies that are going to be shown and some of the guests that you got.
Well, our opening night film is going to be a David Wayne's latest film, They Came Together, which is a spoof of romantic comedies with Paul Rudd, Amy Poehler, and pretty much a who's who of all the, you know, sort of the great comedic talent we got going today. And David Wayne is going to be there opening night. So we'll have a Q&A with him. And Saturday night, we'll be showing the Chicago premiere of Dead Snow, Red vs. Dead, the sequel to Tommy Vercola's Dead Snow.
Yeah.
And coming in that night will be, speaking of Knocked Up, Martin Starr will be coming in.
I love Martin Starr,
man. Your boy from Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Will be coming in. Freaks and Geeks.
Adventureland, man.
Yep. There you go. Yeah. And his co-star Jocelyn DeBoer, who is a native Chicagoan, who is part of the Upright Citizens Brigade and a number of other things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the two of them will be there Saturday night. Sunday, Colin, you want to tell Nick who we're going to have Sunday night?
Sunday night, we are having – this is the thing I'm looking forward to the most. We are having a documentary called – That guy, Dick Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick Miller will be here.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep.
Yes.
You guys got Dick Miller?
We got Dick Miller.
And then after, we'll show that. We'll have a Q&A with Dick Miller, and then we're showing Bucket of Blood.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Will you be there Sunday night,
Nick? I will probably be there Sunday night.
And that's one ticket, by the way. You get two movies for one
double
ticket.
Double feature.
On
right, with Dick Miller.
And
with
then Dick Miller will be there.
And by the way, if you don't know who Dick Miller is, you know him.
Yeah, he's in all the Joe Dante movies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a Roger Corman, you know, staple.
Yeah.
You know, just a great working class character actor.
Yeah.
If you saw a picture of him, you'd know right away. You could probably name five movies that you've seen once just by looking at a picture of him, like, oh yeah, I know him from Gremlins, I know him from, you know, Explorers, Manet, and all these other great
Awesome. Films. Okay, what else?
So our next guest, Tuesday night, we're gonna be showing Nick Offerman, American Ham. It's a concert film about his stand-up tour, his one-man show.
Yeah, yeah.
And the director, Jordan Voight Roberts, will be here to talk about that. Wednesday night, we're going to have Bobcat Goldthwait's latest film, Willow Creek, his found footage Bigfoot movie. And Mr. Goldthwait will be here.
Oh, he's coming in too?
Yes.
Wow, very cool.
Yes, he'll be here. That'll be Wednesday night, the May 14th. And then our closing night film, I do want to mention on our closing night, we're going to be showing Obvious Child, the Jenny Slate film from Sundance. And that will be at 6:30 on Thursday, the May 15th. And then we're closing the film with a local Chicago film called Animals that I talked about at South by Southwest. Actor, star, and the co-writer, David Desmalchian, and director Colin Shifley will be here for that Q&A. David Desmalchian, if you don't recognize the name, he was the suspected kidnapper and Prisoners.
Yeah.
And he's also in The Dark Knight Rises. He plays a very disturbing-looking cop. But this is a wonderful film about junkies and hustlers living in Chicago that really has a very interesting Train-Spotting-type vibe to it. There's a lot of sense of humor about the film.
Mm-hmm.
And those are just the films with guests. Like I said, we have 25 films, and Colin has, again, personally programmed two two shorts programs. That anything you want to say about those?
Yeah, well, it's one will be playing Saturday, May 10th at 1:50 p.m., and the other one will be playing Monday the 12th at 5 o'clock p.m., and it's a treat putting these things together every year. I mean, I really just, you know, I've sort of staked my claim on this, and I love it because I think, you know, short films, they're sort of, you know, they don't get a lot of attention, you know, as much as features do. But if you put together a good collection of short films and make it, you know, make the film sort of connect in a way, it is like watching a feature film if you do it well. We got the first one on Saturday. I have to keep these straight in my head. The first one on Saturday, there's a movie called Cruising Electric. It's only a minute and a half. It's a fake commercial, and that's all I'm going to say. And it's the funniest thing. It might be the funniest thing we have at our festival.
It might be.
They Came Together is really funny, but this might actually be funnier. We got a movie called Dog Food that has
Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, Amanda Seyfried is in it, and a really just a movie that a short film called Lion's Mouth Opens that is just one of the most devastating things you'll ever see. It's a documentary. Eric watched it tonight, and he was just
I'm still kinda, affected by it.
Yeah, yeah.
Featuring Jason Ritter and Mariana Palka. We talked. There's a movie that they did years ago.
Oh,
called
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the next shorts program, we got a movie called Peepers, which was written and starring Laura Gray, who's an actress here in Chicago. Now she's in New York, and her current boyfriend Jordan Klepper, or maybe they're married now. I don't know. Jordan Klepper, who's now on The Daily Show. And they wrote this really funny movie called Peepers. And we got a movie starring Ben Schwartz called I'm a Mitzvah. And a really great collection of animated short films called Crime, the Animated Series. It's kind of an animated documentary about these people telling crime stories, and they're sort of being reenacted through like very pulp-like animation. It's really, really great. And just a lot of wonderful, you know, little documentaries and little asides mm-hmm. thrown in there. They're sort of connected thematically. So the shorts programs are great. Our festival, we got some amazing documentaries. We've got one called Private Violence about these women who are, you know, this is going to be a hard one to sell, but it's about, you know, these women who are enduring the most unimaginable domestic abuse and the organizations that try to help
amazing
them.
Film.
Really yeah. great film.
Well, we're out of time.
Okay.
But Music Box website and one more time with the regular website.
ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com.
And the full schedule is up. Yeah. Tickets, mm-hmm. passes are available May 9th through the 15th at the Music Box Theater.
Yes.
Congratulations, you guys.
Thank you.
I know that's hard work. make sure you support that, and we'll take a quick break. Amy Guth and Red Eye Remix are coming up next.